Music, it's not just part of our daily lives, it's part of our wrestling fandom as well, and it has been for decades. That's where this show comes in. Music of the Mat, the podcast devoted exclusively to the music of pro wrestling, hosted by Andrew Rich. Hey, that's me. Each episode delivers a different topic with a variety of great guests, fun conversations, musical analysis, and of course, a heartfelt pun or two. New episodes drop every other Tuesday on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcast app of choice. Check out Music of the Mat only on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome to Jumping Bomb Audio.
Welcome back to Jumping Bomb Audio, the number one show all about the world of Joshi Pro Wrestling, and we are back for the first time in 2023. My name is Taylor, joined as always by my very good friend Kelly. Kelly, happy 2023.
Happy New Year, everybody. You have a good break? You have a good holidays?
I did have a good holiday. I'm excited to be back on the show. You know, I did miss, we did skip a week, or an episode, I should say. And I did miss talking to you, Kelly, because I always enjoy doing this.
Yeah, no, it was, I messaged you, I'm like, is this the week we do the show? Because I haven't watched anything, but let's cram some stuff, though.
Yeah, Kelly sent me into a panic last week, asking if we were recording, which for a moment I was not prepared, and I thought, oh, I must have definitely screwed up the weeks and miscounted. But no, here we are. We have watched stuff now. We are all prepared, rested up from the holidays, and ready to talk about all the big happenings in the world of Joshi, and even some, I guess, not in the world of Joshi.
Adjacent, I suppose.
Yes, that would be the way to put it. Which, of course, we'll have to cover, but that will be coming up. We are going to be talking Stardom's Dream Queendom show from the end of last year, as well as the yearly Tokyo Joshi January 4th show at Korakuen Hall and everything in between. So let's dive right into it. But before we do, got to get to the plugs. Follow us on Twitter at JBombAudio, or you can follow Kelly at ComicGeekKelly, or me at TameHambo. Subscribe to this podcast on your podcast app of choice, and if that app of choice happens to be Apple Podcasts, we'd really appreciate a 5-star rating and review. And if you're feeling extra generous, you can donate to the show at redcircle.com/shows/jumping-bomb-audio. So getting right into it, the first show we're going to dive in deep here is Stardom Dream Queendom show from December 29th at Ryogoku Sumo Hall in front of 3,869 fans. Kelly, what did you think of Stardom's last big show of 2022 and the last big show from 2022 that we will be covering?
It sure was a big Stardom show. Like, that just, it feels like all their other ones. There is some stuff on here I really liked, but there is a lot in the middle where it's just like, oh my God, end this, please.
I was about to say, what? I was confused. I was like, is that a positive review or a negative review? Calling it a
big
show.
It's a middle of the road review. It's kind of just how I feel about big Stardom shows, where it's just like, yeah, it doesn't really need to be a big show, does it?
I think there were definitely highs on the show, and I don't know if there were lows.
Yeah, there weren't really lows. It was just a lot of, like, that was all right.
It feels like usually the shows start off with a bang, and then you have to wait a while, and then you sort of get to the meat of the show, and that's the exciting part, but there's, you know, two or three things that you just sort of have to be like, all right, we're moving through this, and that's the way it is. So, Kelly, I have to ask first, did you watch the 13-person Stardom Rumble match? Because I did not.
Hey, me neither.
It was...
match of the night, probably.
Probably, although won by the very mysterious, super strong Stardom Giant Machine. A new super strong Stardom machine to join the original super strong Stardom machine. Wow, that was a lot.
I got a scoop on who that was.
I also have a scoop on who that was from the website Cage Match.
Oh, okay. See, I got mine from a source who told me that was actually AEW star Satnam Singh.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Wow. Slightly problematic to have a non-Joshi wrestler come in and win this.
Well, I mean, you know, it's Kikitaro all over again, who was actually in this match as well.
that is right. Yeah, so I guess breaking rules all over the place, but neither of us watched this, so
I got my scoop from Sanjay Dutt. I asked him, like, hey, what brand of pencils do you use? They look really nice. And then he just told me about Satin of Sing, and I was like, oh, that's cool.
Thanks. He didn't answer the question about the pencils.
Never found out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I assume it's Ticonderoga, but I don't know for sure.
How many brands of pencils can you name?
Ticonderoga.
To put you on the spot. Isn't there another... Now I'm like, there is another brand of pencils. But for some reason, all my mind says is number two. But number two is not the brand. Number two is the type
of lead, I think.
Although I think now it's all graphite.
Yeah, it's graphite.
Ticonderoga.
Does Bic make pencils too?
I think would be categorized as mechanical pencils.
True.
Which. I guess are pencils, but I'm thinking of sort of traditional.
Papermate. Papermate makes them.
Are you now looking this up, or are you coming up with this?
No, I'm looking up. I'm looking it up. Yeah.
I don't really use pencils anymore. I think that's
no, I haven't used a pencil in years.
I used to use pencils all the time. Now I almost exclusively use pens.
The New York Times suggests Golden Bear.
Golden Bear. Is that a premium pencil?
I guess it is.
It sounds like a premium pencil. But anyway, if you came here for pencil talk, boy, was this the right week for you to listen.
Ooh, they call the Blackwing 602 the Cadillac of pencils.
How much is that pencil?
$27 for a pack of 12.
Oh, okay. I thought this you pencil, were going to say for one pencil.
Yeah, this pencil has a buttery soft exterior, a replaceable eraser, and an incense cedar barrel, and a smooth dark core. But it costs more than twice as much as normal writing pencils, and you can't use it on standardized tests.
Oh. But a replaceable eraser is big. Although, of course, you have to sharpen. So, like, eventually you have to get rid of the pencil. Yeah. So I feel like maybe the replaceable eraser isn't all of that.
Man, you go on Amazon, you pay $45, you can get 240 Ticonderoga pencils.
Like they're grown on trees.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's get into the matches we did see on this show. Starting with the high-speed title match, the first title match of the evening, the champion Azumi retaining her title against Hikari Shimizu. The Wrestling Observer went 4 stars on this match. Kelly, what did you go on this match?
I was slightly below that. I was 3 3/4. Where were you on that one?
Fascinating, because I was slightly above that. Oh. I went 4 1/4 stars. My first note on this match was, she does it again.
Yeah.
I just think I really like these matches. These matches are very much my style. And the thing I realized during this one, you know, a lot of the thoughts I sort of have about these matches are the same, where I'm like, this is really great and it's really fast paced and it's only 9 minutes. So there isn't like a lot of little bits and pieces that I'm like, ooh, that was good. But Azumi has made everyone, I think everyone she's defended this title against in this reign, look really good.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I can't think of one person who the match ended and I'm like, well, that was good, but thank God we won't be seeing that person again.
I feel like in particular this match, she really did that. Like, I would say this is the most in peril she felt in her defenses. Like, this was way more Azumi working defensively rather than it being a more 50-50 match like it's been in recent, in her the rest of her title run, I think.
Yeah, I wrote in my notes that I thought Hikaru Shimizu looked really great, which is what sort of prompted this thought, because I was like, well, really everyone that she's defended against has looked great. You know, a lot of the people she's defended against also I've liked as wrestlers sort of prior, you know. Mei Suruga comes to mind was another one that I thought Mei looked really good, but that's someone who I know and I like. So maybe it's sort of confirmation bias on my part that I'm like, hey, they look great. Of course, they're people I like. But I think every defense that she's had, you know, she's beaten everyone. But I think everyone, especially the sort of non-stardom people who aren't really in the mix all the time, I think come out looking better than they did before, even though they're losing.
Oh, for sure.
The next match was a pre-Triangle Derby match, a 6-person tag, the team of Hanan, Miyu Iwatani, I'm rusty. Hanan, Mayu Iwatani, and Momo Kogo defeating Hazuki, Koguma, and Sayada in 12 minutes and 4 seconds. This felt like a get people on the show match. And I actually thought in the second half of the match, it had some nice sequences and the pace sort of picked up. But then it kept going and I sort of lost. I was like, oh, this is getting good. They're working to the finish. And then it felt like it kept going for a couple minutes more than I thought it would. And I started to soften on it again, where I was like, oh, like, okay, let's wrap this up. And they didn't for a couple more minutes. And then by the end, I was sort of like, meh.
Yeah, I'm pretty much the same way. I ended up at just 3 stars on it. I thought it was fine. But I do think, like, they put more effort into the match than it probably deserved based on its, like, where it was on the card.
Yeah, and that's, I think, what I was talking about, where I was like, oh, there were some nice sequences. It just sort of felt like a, okay, this match has to go 12 minutes, and they were sort of like, oh, okay, we have a 9-minute match, but we'll go 12.
Yeah, that's pretty much how it felt.
The next match, a tag team match, Mina Shirakawa, accompanied by her new Club Venus members, Zaya Brookside and Mariah May, teaming with Unagi Sayaka, defeated Mai Sakurai and Tekla in 10 minutes and 13 seconds. Kelly, what did you think of the debut of Club Venus?
Club Venus really feels like the ghosts of Gaijin past. Like, it's just like, oh, wow, it's 2016 again. Huh, okay. I thought the match itself was interesting. You don't see a lot of matches that are worked around someone's face. So it's just kind of interesting to see that, and I thought they actually did a pretty good job of it. Overall, it was a fine match. Again, another 3-star match, but I will say I did enjoy this more than the prior trios match. But yeah, I thought the end angle wasn't that great and kind of just felt really long to me. And I'm not super excited about Club Venus. What are your thoughts on Club Venus?
My thought was, I think Xia Brookside is fairly good. I've seen a decent amount of her. I wasn't like jumping up and down when it was like, she's here. I'm sort of like, okay. Like, that's interesting. Mariah May, who is this?
She said on Twitter the other day that she had her 100th match in Currican Hall. So
in the main event,
she hasn't been around that long, I guess.
So we will see. So definitely, I mean, Xia Brookside, I was sort of like, oh, that's someone who is interesting to bring in, but I definitely agree on like the 2016, Rebel Kel energy with Mariah May. Rebel Kel, who I believe wrestled on AEW Dark this week.
Oh, wow. She's back.
It felt to me like a match that was purely designed to introduce Club Venus. Like, mm-hmm. sort of the match didn't really matter all that much. But it was sort of like, here's Club Venus, and then the stuff with Unagi at the end where it was like, fuck off.
Yeah.
sad scenes for Unagi is the note that I put in my notes.
Like, is Unagi going on exile again now?
Well, she does have a match coming up, not in Stardom, which we'll talk about in a little bit. I also have to go to Fashion Corner real quick.
Ooh, okay.
Kelly, I know later in the show we are going to go hard on Fashion Corner.
Oh, yeah, we are.
But I did make a note that Tekla, all of Tekla's choices, fashion and otherwise, seem to be made by the perspective of someone who really loved the year 2003.
Yeah, I can see that.
Came out with the glasses for this match, which felt like someone would have worn in the aftermath of the Matrix sequels releases when they introduced those twin characters who yeah. always wore glasses like that. And people were like, yeah, these glasses are really cool. But like, the hair is another aspect of it, with the like braided parts of the hair that I'm like, this has big 2003.
She is definitely in the background of a music video.
Yes. In the music video for the end credit song from The Matrix.
Yes.
Where like, you'd release it, you'd be like, oh, so-and-so, I don't know, 2003, who would that be? Like, Ashanti has released the end credit song for The Matrix Revolutions. And they'd released the music video like 3 weeks before, and it would have been all green. And they would have had a rapper that would have been like, would have made some rap about being in the Matrix or something.
Tekla stars in a hacking music video by the Crystal Method.
But to go back to Club Venus, I said that Mina walking in had the energy of someone who's accompanied by two quote unquote women. And by that I meant like, when people walk in and sort of like Yujiro,
yeah,
always feels like, you know, the names of the women he walks in with, but they just feel like, we need some women here. Walk to the ring with this person so you can be the woman. That was sort of the energy, and then at the end she introduced them. But
that would honestly be amazing if they were just like, hey Mina, just be Yujiro. Just everything he does in his gimmick, do that.
Start carrying around a cane.
Yeah.
And get the bucket hat.
Like, I think she would be tremendous in that role.
Look, bucket hats are big and they're coming back in wrestling.
I like that hat.
Although if anyone's going to wear a bucket hat, it's going to be Tekla, because that's mm-hmm. a 2003 fashion.
Oh, hell yeah.
Anyway,
she steals the hat off of Mina's head, and then it's hers now. Then they have a whole feud about the hat.
Yeah.
Mina and her women against Tekla and her new hat.
Mina and her women. The next match was a Goddesses of Stardom title, number one contendership, three-way match. Himika and Maika defeating both the teams of Amisore and Mirai and Natsuka Tora and Ruaka in 10 minutes and 6 seconds. This, another match that was fine. I didn't really care about it because it felt like six people who don't. Look, I know it was a number one contendership match, and people are going to respond to what I'm about to say and say, no, they're going to be number one contenders. Feels like six people who don't have a lot of momentum.
Yeah.
Like, Ami is future of Stardom title holder. Okay, that's fine. Himika and Maika feel now firmly entrenched in, you know, they could win. They could, now they're number one contenders. They could win the tag titles. Certainly possible. But it feels sort of like that is starting to become their ceiling.
They are Goto and Yoshihashi.
Correct. I mean, Natsuko Tora and Ruaka, I'm sorry, absolutely, who could ever care about them? And Mirai feels like the thing that happens all the time, which is someone comes in, they get booked incredibly strongly for a very long time, and then Rossi forgets about them, and they just sit in the mid-card, see Himika and Maika.
Yeah, Rossi gets bored of his new toy.
He's like, okay, they've now won this, and then the argument becomes anytime, you know, someone says, oh, they're just sort of floating around. Well, last year they did X, Y, and Z, and I'm like, great, who cares?
I have no thoughts on this match, because as I was watching it, like, as the bell rang, the Vince McMahon news broke.
Ay, ay, ay.
And then I was flooded in a state of just euphoria at thinking about WWE's demise at the hands of Vince McMahon.
Yeah, I could see why you would be distracted by that. but not much else to say about that match. Like I said, I thought it was fine. Shrug. The next match was a singles match between Kairi and Utami, which, say it with me, went to a time limit draw in 15 minutes. My note is that I call the result from the very first second of the match. Literally, I think the first lockup I said, I bet they're going to go to a time limit draw. And then they did. I will say this. I thought the match was good.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it had a real intensity. Utami blocked. They did that sort of typical, like, first seconds of the match, we're going to try and hit our finishers on each other. And I thought Utami's block of Kairi's back fist was really good. It sounded very intentional. Like, sometimes it gets blocked and it's sort of like, I just put my hand up. That felt like, no, get away from me. Kairi hit a great dropkick on Utami in the corner, which I really liked. But let me ask this question, Kelly, and you can answer or don't answer. Let's be in kayfabe for a second.
Okay.
You're in Stardom. You're a wrestler in Stardom now. You're in a promotion where time limit draws happen all the time. Almost every show.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't you as a wrestler try and adapt your style to speed up the matches and not go so incredibly slow?
Either that, or I would adapt my style to give myself more stamina to last these time limit draws.
I just feel like we see so many time limit draws, and yet we don't see a lot of these time limit draws where, like, all these time limit draws feel like, we're stalling for time.
Yeah.
But, like, this is a 15-minute match.
It's some psychological thing where a wrestler knows they're working a time limit draw, and suddenly they have to, their brain tells them, whoa, slow it down, buddy. Slap on a headlock.
Like, I think it would be interesting. I mean, I don't know if that's the right way to say it. I don't know if I think it would be interesting. Like, if one of the high-speed title matches went to a 15-minute draw, I'm sure they would not start the match by, you know, plodding around, burning 5 minutes. Like, I want to see some of these where it's like a 15-minute draw where it's 15 minutes of like, go, 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 go. Oh, and it happens. You go to a time limit draw.
Didn't they do the draw with the high-speed title last year between Izumi and Starlight Kid? Or am I thinking of something else?
Was that a...
I don't know. Thought they did a draw in Kurikan between those two.
But I'm saying, like, that sort of energy where it's like, we're going fast and we happen to go to a time limit draw.
Yeah.
That's the sort of thing where I'm like, oh, like, okay. I sort of buy that. You went really, you were trying to win the whole time. Like, these matches feel very much like, hey, in kayfabe, why are you, like, wandering around in a match where you've only got 15 minutes, you're wrestling, you know, for either person, Kairi for Utami or Utami for Kairi, you're wrestling one of the best wrestlers in the company. Wouldn't you be like, hey, maybe I should pick up my speed so I don't get a time limit draw? But then time limit draws are not really, there's no sort of punishment.
No.
So why would people speed themselves up?
It's weird. I don't know what you do with it. Like, I guess, I don't know, because it's like, they don't lose the match if they get the draw, and it keeps them in good standing, I suppose. But, like, I don't know, I guess it doesn't, there's no reason why they shouldn't be trying to, like, and it feels like now, even when they're making the time calls, they don't rush anymore.
Yeah, there's, like, no sense of urgency. Anyone trying to win. Because I think at the end of the day, it's like, whoops, we went to a draw.
Yeah.
Like, I guess for Kairi, that might make sense because it's like, well, I'm the title holder. So if we go to a draw, who cares? Like, I guess I fought off my challenger not pinning me. You know, not this wasn't a title match, but, like, if she would have won, then she could have said, well, I pinned you. I should get a title match. And if you're Kairi, you're like, well, you didn't pin me, so you don't get a match. Like, that sort of makes sense, but I don't know. If you're Utami, yeah, wouldn't you be like, I really should try and as hard as I can to win this match?
Yeah, you'd think.
But I don't know. I went 3¾.
Hey, me too.
Hey, look at that.
It was weird to see, like, Utami in kind of this tune-up position for Kairi, but, like, the match ended up feeling more like a prelude to a match they're going to have down the road, so it kind of worked in that. But prior to the match, I was like, is this just gonna be some weird squash or what?
The next match was our second title match, the Artists of Stardom titles hardcore match. The Prominence team of Haragi Karumi, Risa Sera, and Suzu Suzuki defeating the champions Momo Watanabe, Saki Kashima, and Starlight Kid in 15 minutes and 54 seconds to win the title. Kelly, what did you think of this match?
This match rocked. I was super happy with it. It was a very welcome change of pace to the show. Just two trios that I really like a lot going out there and having a killer match, and that was super fun, and it was exactly what I was kind of hoping it would be. And I'm very excited to see more of Prominence and Stardom. I really like all the stuff they do in the company, and it, like I say, it gives things a different feel, which is nice. It gives some variety to the shows. So I was really happy with this. I went 4¼ on it. What do you think?
That's very interesting. I enjoyed it, but there was something that sort of held it back from being really great. Like, I went 3.5.
Okay.
I was probably on the 3¾ border. There's something about these matches, these prominent matches, when they're all in a group, that feels to me sort of like Suzu Suzuki is here, and also these two other people are here.
Oh, Suzu and her women.
Yes, Suzu and her women, where so much of the Suzu stuff is so exciting, and then the minute she is not the focus, it's sort of like, well, this is a, you know, average match. And I mean, I do think a lot of this was good. I think that they had the right opponent in this Oedo Tai team who were all sort of willing to go there with them. I do worry about, like, prominence defending the title against, like, Momo Kogo, Saya Iida, and Lady C, in that, are they just going to do, like, a straight-up match?
I hope not.
But are they going to do a hardcore match with some of this roster that I think is probably on the side of, like, we don't want to do that?
I think they should. Just get them out of their comfort zone and try different things. Like, I think that would be cool. I mean, I don't know if they will, but I really hope that's what happens.
I guess I'm, like, future, like, looking ahead when I don't really know the answer. I guess the answer could be they always do hardcore matches and everyone in the promotion is really good. I mean, and there are a number of people who I think I'm like, oh yeah, I bet they would get, like, Tom, we know.
Let Tom run the blade.
Is willing to do that stuff. I think there would be other people. I mean, even though we don't love her, you know, Natsuko Tora would probably do it. I don't know, but it's just one of those things where it's like, that will be interesting to see. But a big thing that held the match back for me was the frickin' cameraman not seeing the big spot of the match.
Oh, that right at the end sucked ass.
I was like, boy, didn't Kelly and I just talk about how bad wrestling camera work is on this show? So that I was sort of like, oh, the big spot, and I just missed it, and that's sort of the conclusion of this match, and it got missed.
Yeah, no, that was bad. I was really upset about that.
The one spot that I really did love that they did not miss was Starlight Kid nearly running over Kurumi's head in the first, like, five seconds of the match with the bicycle.
Yeah, that was, like, crazy.
Good God, that could have gone very wrong.
It was an interesting spot idea, but boy howdy, that could have gone so badly.
I mean, it made sense, but I was like, ooh, a couple more inches and that, it would have been, and it was like in the first few seconds where would have just been like, well, the match is over. Someone's head has been crushed by a bicycle. That's why you should put, like, a piece of wood down or something to ride on.
Got to get a ramp.
Yeah, do a trick off of them. That would be fun. So, yeah, that was the Artists of Stardom title match. The first of two, I would call them, outsider teams to win titles, because the next match was our Goddesses of Stardom title match, where the team of Nanae Takahashi and Yu defeated Natsupoi and Tom Nakano in 15 minutes and 57 seconds to win the titles. Kelly, as a big Meltier fan, how do you feel about this result?
I don't know. I thought the match was fine, but, like, I don't really care about either team. Like, I like Nanae Takahashi. I don't really care about you at all. And, like you mentioned, I'm not a big Meltier fan, despite liking both of the wrestlers in it. I just don't like them as a team. So, I don't know. I thought this match was pretty boring for the most part, but it picked up here and there. So, I don't know. It just kind of, it happened. It was a 3-star special, I thought. I guess I'm happy that Meltier aren't the champions anymore.
I actually thought the match was pretty good. I was probably like 3.5, 3.75 again. But my note was, I really enjoyed this, but absolutely dreading a Yu tag title reign.
Yeah.
Look, I've seen it. She's got all these tag titles in all of these smaller promotions, you know, Sendai Girls, and things like that. And it's like, I'm never really all that excited by these matches. I thought the big highlight of this match was Natsupoi, who I thought looked once again, like almost every time she wrestles, looked really good. She's clearly super talented, and it's like every time I see her, I'm like, this is a great wrestler. She's putting it all together. And again, it's one of those things like the previous match where I'm like, yeah, it was a pretty good matchup of teams. This, I was glad to have Natsupoi, but I'm like, am I excited to see like you face off against Micah? Not really.
Nah.
And I do like Nanai, but it's only half the team.
Yeah.
So I was sort of like, oh, it was a good match, but oh, this could be, you know, and maybe they drop it after, you know, they drop it right to Himika and Micah, I guess is possible. And then maybe this isn't a problem, but I just sort of was like, hey, good match, but I don't know that I'm all that excited about what's coming next.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess I don't have to deal with Meltier's entrance anymore, so that's cool.
Well, who's to say they don't build themselves right back up and come back for the tag title?
That's probably exactly what they'll do.
The semi-main event of this show was the Wonder of Stardom title match. The champion, Saya Kamitani, making defense number 12, defeating Haruka Umasaki in 16 minutes and 33 seconds. All I have to say about this match, beginning of the match, almost right away, Saya doing a flipping, diving headbutt off the apron, which didn't connect and looked really stupid. And I wrote, Saya, never change.
Yep. Saya gonna Saya.
Just a move that just looked like garbage. And my only other note was, it was a Saya match.
Yeah, I enjoyed this a little bit more than I thought I would. It's still a super weird match. Like, why is this happening? Why why is this the semi-main event? I don't really understand, but I don't know. I thought Umasaki did really well, and Saya wasn't completely terrible, but there were a couple times where she sold stuff like she was Shawn Michaels in that one Hulk Hogan match. Like, there was a handful of times where she just kind of flopped around when she took a bump. It was real weird. But overall, it was good. I went 3.5 on it, which is probably the highest I've gone in a Saya match in a while, I think.
For you, that's like a 5-star Saya match.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. I don't have anything else to say.
Yeah.
The last match of the show, the main event, the big match on this show for the World of Stardom title, Julia defeating Shuri in 29 minutes and 51 seconds to become new World of Stardom champion. The Wrestling Observer gave it 4.75 stars. Kelly, what did you think of the match?
I was right in line with that. I went 4.75 as well. I thought it was a really damn good match. I think it was at its best when it felt like a brawl, which is definitely the style Julia excels in for sure. But like in the third quarter, it kind of went into more of their usual Stardom main event formula. So it kind of was just like, oh, okay. I mean, this is still good, but like this wasn't what it was before. But then they kind of went back and kept doing their own thing, and then Julia dropped Siri on her head, and it was awesome. I can't believe they did the Taz Bam Bam suplex off of the ramp onto the chairs spot. That was insane and probably gave the match an extra 0.5 star for me. I was super excited about that spot, and it was cool to see Julia get her big win. What'd you think?
Well, 3 for 3. I also went 4.75 stars.
Oh, we get a free sub!
I just really liked it. I for a while was like, okay, this is four. I was at about 4.5, and I think I had the same thing you did, where there was sort of a stretch where I was like, okay, this is good. I'm not like blown away in the moment, and then it sort of went back up into the sort of finishing sequence with the headbutts, which is something I know not everyone enjoys, but I enjoy.
They're fucking cool as hell.
And then just the finishing sequence of everyone getting, not everyone, both of them getting dropped on their heads multiple times. And
God, they should have dropped Daichi on his head.
Well, there was one pin that was not done correctly. and I was like, Daichi, it was a pin where, I don't remember who, I think it might have been Julia pinning Shuri, where Shuri, it didn't look like she kicked out, but Daichi just pulled up really early.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, no, that's not right.
I had to explain to someone in the Voices of Wrestling Slack that Daichi kind of sucks at the 2.99 kickouts, because they were like, wow, they kind of screwed up some pins. I was like, well, not their fault.
The Daichi house style.
Yeah. So if you had to redo your top 10 from last episode, where would this rank, do you think?
Oh, gosh, I would have to look at my 10. I don't even remember what I put. But
I went back, and I think I would end up slotting it at 6.
In terms of stardom, it would be below the cage match. And, I mean, frankly, I would probably have to go back and rewatch the Azumi Starlight Kid match, because that I gave 4.75. And because it's been so long since I watched it, I think I might have that one ahead. Let's look at this. What was my list? So it would be probably number 3 or maybe number 4.
I slotted mine in between Julia versus Suzu from the 5-star and Shuri versus Asuka from the Hana Memorial Show.
Yeah, and mine would probably either, because if it was 3, it would be ahead of the Saya Starlight Kid match from July, which I also went 4.75 on, or it would be below, which would make it 4. Just ahead of the Magical Sugar Rabbits free Wi-Fi tag match from Yes Wonderland, which was the first of my 4.5-star matches. So it would be up there. And I'm sure someone will get angry that we didn't go 5 stars, but that's the way life is.
Yeah.
It's okay. We can all think differently. So that was Stardom's Dream Queendom show. Next, we will dive into our first show of 2023, Tokyo Joshi's show, their New Year show from Korakuen Hall on January 4th in front of 1,111 fans. A fun number, 1111.
Yeah.
Kelly, what did you think of this show overall?
I thought it was really good. It was a super fun show. They always do really good January 4th shows, and this one was no different.
This was a show where I was enjoying myself, but I think if the main event had not delivered, I think I may have walked away slightly disappointed.
I can see that.
As we said at the end of last year, new year for Tokyo Joshi, the standards are higher, and I think I would have been like, oh, it was good, but I wish it had been better.
Yeah, no, that's understandable.
But the main event did deliver, as we'll talk about in a second, so I thought the show was very good. The show began with Himawari's debut in defeat, losing to Yuki Aino in 6 minutes and 5 seconds. Kelly, what did you think of the opening match of the show?
I thought it was fine. I thought Himawari came off really well. She didn't feel like a rookie. She felt like she was someone they'd kind of just pulled off the indies out of obscurity, and she's already got her character and stuff down. Because, like, she felt like she's been doing this for a while. And again, it's not like she's great in ring, but she just kind of has all the personality and just how she carries herself down so well. I like her gear a lot. It looks different from a lot of the other women in Tokyo Joshi. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think Yuki Aino is the best person to have a debut match against, because I don't know. I don't think she's very good, but whatever. So 2.5 stars on the match. It was fine, but I think Himawari came off much better than that in terms of like just her presence is there already, I think.
I also thought the match was fine. I wasn't really all that over the moon by with any of it. I thought it was, I think that we've sort of gotten spoiled with a lot of these younger wrestler rookie / younger wrestler debuts, in that a lot of them have had a very easy hook into who the wrestlers are. You know, Juria, Kaya Toribami is one. And this sort of felt like she did look polished, but at the end I was sort of like, okay, that was a wrestler. I don't really know that much about them.
Yeah, she's kind of just like, she's comedy girl, you know?
Yeah, it's like, oh, you are a wrestler. Okay, that's what I learned in this 6 minutes, but I sort of already knew that before because it's a wrestling show, so I knew that you were a wrestler.
Yeah, like if someone told me like, hey, she's been working for like the past 5 years in a random Osaka indie no one's ever heard of doing comedy stuff, I'd be like, yeah,
well, I'd believe that. From Actress Girls,
did she? Okay,
yes, so she is not brand, she is not brand new.
Okay, see, I thought she was totally new.
I mean, she didn't have a lot, she's not like a, you know, seasoned veteran, but yes, has a little bit. So you're right in a way. So that was the opening match. The next match, a tag team match, Juria Nagano and Moka Miyamoto, the Karate Friends, defeating Arisa Endo and the officially debuting Wakana Uehara in 9 minutes and 15 seconds. And Kelly, we told the people that we were going to go to Fashion Corner, and here it is. It's time for us to go to Fashion Corner.
Oh, boy.
With one of our favorite topics, the gear of Moka Miyamoto, who debuted, what do I want to say, updated gear?
I guess.
I'm not sure I would call it new. I mean, it was new, but I'm not sure I would call it new in that it's totally different. And we disagree. This was the only thing that we talked about really any of these shows since we've recorded last. In that I thought her gear, I thought the top looks better because it looks all like one thing now, as where before it looked like two different bits of gear stitched together. But the skirt, why are we wearing a blanket?
The whole thing to me looks like she tripped and fell and like wrapped herself up in some drapes that she pulled down from the windows. And they're like, you gotta go wrestle, get out there. And she just kind of wrapped the drapes around herself and ran out there, and it just became her gear.
Because the top does look, I'm like, okay, that is sort of karate inspired. I can see it as one piece. And then the bottom is just like this weird, I don't know.
It's just
thing.
So much fabric.
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy slab packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club slab pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, And sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, ah, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs. And it ends up being, you know, almost nothing. You know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You get a display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, sending these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet, arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver. No drilling required. Keyless entry. No more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second. Fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived, and really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys, reach in my pocket, or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy Video Lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second. Door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
Yeah, it looks very heavy.
It's very much like the what I always think with Raku, where I'm just like, how is she not just melting? Like, it's got to be hot as hell working in that.
And then you have Juria coming in who looks very cool.
Yeah.
And you're sort of like, can't you, you know, now you're like a tag team sort
get
of.
Matching and gear. Tag,
yes.
And don't give Juria Mocha's gear.
I also think, and this may be controversial, I'm not opposed to the bow in the hair, but the bow in the hair is so big. It's overwhelm. I think it overwhelms her head.
Yeah. Yeah, it kind of does.
Where you just look at her and you're like, oh, she's wearing a giant bow. So it's like, oh, she's wearing a giant bow. She sort of has the sort of karate gi inspired top. And then a very long, heavy skirt. And it just feels like three different characters.
Someone had infinite buy one, get one free coupons for Joanne's Fabrics. And just whatever fabric they needed for her gear, they just bought double of it and used it all.
But other than that, I thought the...
We're not done yet.
Yeah. Oh, you have more fashion?
Yes, we need to talk about Uehara's gear.
Oh, this is all you, because I thought her gear was fine.
It's just Maki Ito gear.
Well,
It's just straight up old Maki Ito gear.
It looks too similar. You
got
to use what you got.
I guess, but I don't know. It's too similar to the gear she used to wear, and it needs to change. Because every time I see it, I'm like, why is Maki Ito from 2 years ago wrestling?
Oh, see, I didn't have that issue. I thought that she looked fine. I was so distracted by Mocha.
Entirely possible.
But I was going to say, other than that, the match, I thought it was a fun match, and I thought Arisa Endo looked great.
Yeah, Endo was great. Mocha, Juria, and Endo were all really good, I thought. I think Uehara did absolutely nothing to stand out and kind of is just super forgettable in this match. And that might be the worst debut they've had in Tokyo Joshi in a while because of that.
I mean, I think she was in the ring with Endo and Nagano, who both
smoked
really
her.
Pull a lot of attention. But, I mean, they're older wrestlers.
Yeah.
You know, I think Himawari got a much better debut match because you have more of an opportunity to be like, hey, look at what I can do, as opposed to being in the ring with two people who are very young and already very good. And it's like, I don't know. I think there's very few rookies that would have come in and been like, wow, they look, you know, they look on the same level with these people.
Yeah, maybe it was just a bad place to debut her, but at the same time, maybe they don't trust her to do singles matches yet.
Possibly we will see. I know that she's going to miss some shows as she's figuring out her schedule to get back, but hopefully once she does that, she'll be wrestling more frequently.
Yeah.
The next match was a 6-person tag team match. The team of Kaya Torabami, Mahiro Kiryu, and Nao Kakuta defeating Haruna Neko, Palm Harajuku, and Raku. This was the Tokyo Joshi get some people on the card that they have on every show. Standout for me was Palm Harajuku, who I loved, and I thought everyone else was aggressively fine.
Palm Harajuku, wrestler of the year 2023, let's go.
She is going to get a big moment at some point, maybe with someone we'll talk about later, and it will be a big deal, and it will be big.
Yep, I'm so excited for that eventual day.
Is what I think. I think everyone else was just perfectly average, including Torabami, who sort of took that leap, maybe not a leap, but took the step up that we talk about, but now seems to be stuck with the also-rans of the company.
Yeah.
It feels like they've seen her and been like, well, this is the top. And so she's now sort of stuck to the Neko Kiryu's, which is also weirdly where now Kakuta spends a lot of time, which is sort of strange to me because I do think that she's a little bit above that level. But it's tougher now. You got a lot of good talent, so you got to really stick out.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of the match?
I thought it was good. It wasn't like blow away awesome, but I don't know. I think it was a solid 3-star match. And like I said, Pom is the wrestler of the year in 2023, so gotta get on that train now.
The next match was a New Year's tradition, the Hyper Masao Shoko Nakajima match, which went to a shocking draw in 14 minutes and 57 seconds. What is this, Stardom? Am I right? In the New Year Rabbits and Horns match. Kelly, what did you think? I'll let you go first. What did you think of this?
I thought this was a lot of fun. I enjoyed how it was a ladder match that turned into a lumberjack ladder match, which turned into a lumberjack ladder match where all weapons are legal. Thought that was a really good time. When the lumberjacks came out, I will say, Himawari fit right in. Like, it wasn't just like, oh, look at this new girl. It was just like, hey, here's this other person that kind of just fits in with everyone else with their hammers and rabbit hats. Of course, as always, the bucket of kaiju toys came out and I started sweating. Don't like to see those boys get hurt. The bump onto the Mechagodzilla looked like it sucked a whole lot. And just overall, the match was stupid as hell and I loved it. 4 stars.
Yeah, another New Year's classic between Hyper Masao and Shoko Nakajima. I did think it was funny, and I did enjoy that they went to the draw. I think the highlight for me was the lumberjacks and the action with the lumberjacks. Although I didn't quite understand that, I think it was Hyper Masao attacked Ariso Endo like right when they came out. And I thought, oh, she's going to get her back. But then it felt like she just sort of got up and was equally mean to both people.
Who was it that gave Endo the suplex on the floor?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Okay, that was that. That was such a weird moment.
Where I was like, oh, she's going to get better and she's going to come back and really use the hammer and knock her. And then it just didn't really happen. Which I was like, oh, maybe I was just anticipating something happening that, you know, wasn't supposed to happen. But that's what I thought. I thought, well, she's got a hammer. She's got to come back and hammer. But then she came back and hammered everyone equally.
Yeah.
And Kiryu losing the top of multiple hammers.
Yes.
No one else did, I don't think.
No.
I think she was the only person who couldn't keep the hammer head on the hammer. The hammer head on the hammer stick?
Yeah, sounds right.
Okay. But yeah, another, I don't know. These would be so hard to rate for me. Like, rate these Masao Nakajima New Year's matches.
That's why I just throw 4 stars on it. Because I'm like, I know I liked it. I cannot justify going any higher.
Yeah.
But it definitely needs to go in my list.
The next match was the Princess of Princess title, number one contendership, 6-person delayed entry battle royal with Mizuki defeating Hikari Noah, Maki Ito, Rika Tatsumi, Suzume, and Yuki Kamifuku in 16 minutes and 58 seconds. This to me felt like the battle royal part of it was very fast.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like people were getting in the ring and being like, and now we're out. And then they had a very abbreviated sort of 6-minute Mizuki Maki Ito match. And I'm like, if everyone was just going to get in the ring and then get out in a couple minutes, why didn't they just figure out some way to be like, the number one contender match is Mizuki and Maki Ito?
Yeah, it definitely felt like they should have just done that.
Because the 6 minutes we got was really good between Mizuki and Ito, but I was like, why did we waste time like having Suzume run in the ring for 3 minutes to then, you know, get thrown out or whatever, or, you know, go over the top rope? like Akari Noah was in the match less than 5 minutes. So it was just sort of strange. And I was sort of getting into Mizuki and Ido, and then it ended. And I was sort of like, ooh, if it would have had more time, this would have been really good.
Yeah, I think it was a case of just getting people on the card. Because you figure you had two new people and three outsiders on the card. So that's five spots there that normally would be taken up by these people.
Yeah, that is true. It gets everyone, it gets all these people on the card. But, you know, if I had been like, oh, great, I get to see Suzume, and then you see Suzume for like 4 minutes, I would be like, what the heck?
Yeah.
Just do like a 10-minute... I don't know, do a 10-minute Maki Ito Mizuki match and do a 10-minute Hikari Noah and Suzume versus Rika Tatsumi and Yuki Kamifuku random tag.
Yeah, that probably would have been
the You're only talking way to go. About 3 more minutes of time. Now you have the entrances, but yeah, it was just sort of, it wasn't bad. I just sort of wish that it would have been the singles, because I think the singles would have ended up really good, and it tells, hopefully, you know, I hate to say this because every time I've said this on the podcast, I've been wrong. But the first step in Mizuki finally winning the title, you know, defeating the people of her past and her future, you know, starting with Maki Ito. I mean, it's sort of a short journey, but starting with Maki Ito and eventually then Yuka. I mean, I would say those are the two major people of Mizuki's story in Tokyo Joshi.
Oh, for sure.
So I don't know. Maybe they also thought that if they did Mizuki Maki Ito, that it would be too obvious that it would be Mizuki, maybe. But it was sort of obvious even though there were six people in this match.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, I don't know. It's going to be Mizuki. You know, it's not going to be Hikari Noah. I thought it could, I mean, I guess the good thing at the end is I thought, well, they could go Maki Ito. I guess that would make sense, because then you thought, well, if it was Maki Ito, then maybe Miyu wins the main event and they do that again. But like, I didn't think Rika was winning Suzume, Yuki, Hikari Noah. So.
Yeah, it was only one of two people in this match that was winning for sure.
Seems like we're a little down on the match, but I did enjoy what there was.
Yeah, I still went 3.75 on it.
The next match was our first of three title matches, the International Princess title, the champion Miyu Watanabe retaining the title over the visiting Trish Adora in 10 minutes and 34 seconds. Kelly, I had only seen a handful of Trish Adora matches before this one. How familiar were you with her before this match?
Yeah, I've only seen a handful of her stuff too. Just matches here and there, and then some of her AEW appearances.
And what did you think of her?
I think she's good. I think she's good, and I thought she came off really well here. I think she definitely felt like she belonged in the match. You know, it didn't feel like she was outclassed or anything, so that was good. I will say I think the match felt a little short, and it was only 10.5 minutes, so like I think they could have got a little bit more time. But overall, decent match. 3.5 stars from me. What'd you think of it?
Yeah, I really liked it. I went 3.75. I do agree with you that it did feel slightly short to me. But I liked what there was. I liked, for the most part, wasn't perfect, but I like a lot of Miyu's arm selling. There was the moment earlier on in the match where she went to do the big swing for the first time. And she sort of went to do it. She did a small sort of sell of like, oh, my arm. And then started walking away and like did a bigger sell as if it was like, ooh, it hurt for a moment. And then it's sort of the adrenaline's wearing off of trying to do the swing. And now it really hurts. I thought that was sort of a interesting sell that I hadn't seen before and felt very real to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, that was great. I think near the end, the arm selling sort of disappeared as they came to the conclusion. It was sort of like, hey, where'd all the selling go?
Yeah.
But then the match just sort of ended. So it was like, oh, it went away and now the match is over. So I really did like what I see. As I said, I hadn't seen too much of Trish Adora, except I think mostly probably close to what you have seen, which is, you know, that some of the AEW stuff and one or two matches on the indies or WrestleMania weekend or whatever it was. But I thought she looked good. I would be interested in seeing her again. But yeah, 3 3/4. I thought it was a really solid, solid match. The semi-main event was for the Princess Tag Team titles, the Wasteland War Party of Heidi Howitzer and Max the Impaler, defeating the champions Saki Akai and Yuki Arai in 11 minutes and 29 seconds. This was another one I thought was a really good, solid match. I thought it really picked up near the end. I thought the beginning was solid, but not blow away. And then I thought they really stepped it up a bit near the end. I really liked the part where Akai and Arai were just kicking Max repeatedly in the head. I really enjoyed that. And Kelly, what did you think?
I thought this was an incredibly well-built match. It was a really good title change that I wasn't really expecting, but then as the match was building, it's like, oh, okay, yeah, I think Wasteland War Party might pick it up, because they really picked apart the less experienced member of the team and kind of took advantage of that Arai is still so new. And so they used that against the team and was able to take them out and win the belt that way. Like, it was a very smartly booked match. I liked it a lot from that perspective.
And what did you end up going on the match?
I went 3.5.
Okay, I went 3 3/4. Wow, we're lining up with our differences
here. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was really good. I'm excited by the title change, because I think that, you know, certainly Max has gotten over in Tokyo Joshi. I think the team will get over, and I think that whoever beats them, Pom Harajuku,
Pom and Haru Naneko,
are going to get a big reaction.
Oh, yeah.
It's sort of, I don't know if you said this or someone else said this, but it was sort of what I think Tokyo Joshi was trying to do with their first defense against Rhea O'Reilly and what's her face?
Oh, yeah, that match sucked.
Like, sort of a foreign team that was like, ah, we're bad and we're coming in.
Yeah, but this was what that match wanted to be. That was the version of this match we have at home.
The main event was for the Princess of Princess title, Yuka Sakazaki retaining her title over Miyu Yamashita in 16 minutes and 8 seconds. And Kelly, we have to talk about the thing we have to talk about first, which is Miyu taking a flipping bump off the turnbuckle to the floor and smacking her head. She
Insane.
Has recently been diagnosed with a mild concussion.
Oh, really? Oh, yes. I missed that.
So she will be missing, I believe, a few shows. Or maybe she won't be missing. I think she missed the two shows that they did this weekend, because I think she will be back for the Max Hart tournament. But I thought when it first happened in the match, I thought, well, the match is over because she's concussed and she's not going to be able to keep going. I mean, it looked crazy.
It looked insane. Like, it was a cool spot. I'll tell you that. I know she got hurt, but hey, she seems to be okay. And she pushed through the rest of the match and did some more insane shit as the match went on. So, like, I don't know. I think it turned out to be okay, because it was a cool as hell match.
Yeah, I knew it was okay when they got up and then she gave Yuka like a suplex on the floor or something.
Yes.
There was some other crazy move where I was like, oh, okay. Either she's okay or she's maybe not okay and just doesn't care and is going to keep doing crazy stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, they just went out there and were like, hey, what if we just kill each other for 16 minutes? And Yuka was like, okay, let's do that. And it was fucking awesome.
Yeah, they just went at each other. They had the headbutt at one point, which I couldn't exactly tell whether it was a shoot headbutt or not.
I think it was a shoot.
That's what I thought as well, but then I was like, maybe it wasn't, because it's a very unusual Tokyo Joshi thing to have happen. There was the Crash Rabbit Heat that Miyu did to the back of Yuka's head, which looked wild. And then they just had a bunch of crazy strikes.
Yeah. Just super stiff the entire match.
My one complaint was that I thought the middle sagged slightly, like very minorly, but sort of in the middle, I was like, and then they picked it back up. But I went 4.5, so still a match that I thought was very good.
Yeah, I went 4.75. It was cool to see Terminator Yuka return and take out Miyu. Just fucking awesome. Real good chance it ends up in my top 10 of the of 2023.
And then after the match, number one contender, Mizuki, coming out to officially challenge Yuka for the big show. There was some hesitation there as tag team partners saying they didn't want to fight each other, but it will be happening. And once again, Kelly and I will get our hopes up.
Yep.
That Mizuki will win the title, but we'll have to see.
Now, did they say when the match is?
It's at their big March 18th show.
Okay.
Which is at, what's the venue called? Anyway, the big March 18th show that they're having. But we'll see. I mean, I guess the good thing now is I think, well, it's so obvious Mizuki will win, but I've thought that many times, so now I'm doubting myself, which I guess good booking by Tokyo Joshi then.
I think Yuka might win purely because I wouldn't take the title off her yet. Right now, she's the best she's ever been. Like, I would let her have a long-ass title reign.
I don't know. I gotta stick with Mizuki because I love Mizuki and I think that she should win the title.
Hell, you know what? Have Yuka hold the title for another year and then Mizuki is eventually the one that beats her for it.
My gosh. Well, we'll see in a few months' time what happens. But that was Tokyo Joshi's January 4th show. What else has been happening in the world of Joshi? Well, the one thing we've got to talk about briefly, not from a Joshi show, is the official debut of Mercedes Moné at New Japan's Wrestle Kingdom, coming out after the IWGP women's title match between Kairi and Tam Nakano, and attacking Kairi and challenging her for the title, which will be happening on the New Japan San Jose show in February in the United States. Kelly, did you watch? I'm assuming you did. Did you watch the IWGP women's title match? What did you think of it? And what did you think of the debut of Mercedes Moné?
Yes, I did watch it. I liked the match a lot. It was a hard-hitting sprint, and that was cool to see. But it was one of those things where it was clear they did not have much time because of what was going to happen in the post-match. And so that was all contained as one big segment. So the match definitely got cut because of that. So that kind of sucks. But I don't know. I think for what time they had, they made good use of it. I went 3.75 on it. The debut, I think, wasn't good. I think it was a bad debut. The first time I saw it, I thought it was kind of just awkward. But I watched all of Wrestle Kingdom yesterday, and so I rewatched some stuff, including Mercedes Moné's debut. And now I've settled on, I think it was actively bad. I think the promo wasn't any good, but again, I think she was just trying to, I guess, talk slowly so the Japanese fans could understand her. I think that's what she was doing, but I thought her music was bad. I think her gear was bad. I think her hair was bad. I think her move on Kairi looked bad. like, if this wasn't Mercedes Monet and it wasn't Sasha Banks and wasn't a big deal that she was jumping over, I think more people would be like, this is a bad segment.
I think she might have been, not that they would have wanted this to happen, but I think she may have been better served by debuting in AEW first. Just to have that way of being like, I'm here and I'm established. It feels, even though many people know who she is, it felt like an unestablished person, just in that we don't really have any sense of who she is outside of WWE.
Yeah.
So that was sort of, I didn't think the promo was terrible. I thought it was just sort of one of those awkward things where it's an English speaker, you know, speaking to a crowd that is not mostly English speakers. I mean, I thought the move that she hit did not look good. I think if the move would have looked good, I think it would have, I think people could have probably gotten over the promo.
Yeah.
A little bit more, but then she was like, I'm going to blah, blah, blah. And then you sort of hit a move that is like, ooh, that looked bad. And then you're like, well, the whole thing is bad. Whereas if she hit a move that looked really great, people would probably be like, yeah, not a great promo, but wow, she laid Kyrie out. I also still think it's one of those weird things where I'm not entirely sure how much New Japan exclusive fans really care about this title. I think they sort of look at they look at Wrestle Kingdom, which had this IWGP women's match on it, and they're sort of like, oh, interesting. But they have really no connection to it.
You know what it is now? It's the NWA title.
Well, I think it's a little bit better than that.
But, like, just look at the card placement. It's pretty much in the exact same spot where the NWA title matches would be.
Yeah, and it just feels like something where I'm not entirely sure doing a, I don't even know how long the match was, doing this sort of short match.
It couldn't have been more than, like, 7 minutes.
Yeah, where the outcome is not in doubt. And, like, I don't know that anyone looked at it and was like, wow, we've got to watch Stardom now. You know, not to mention the whole thing sort of being overshadowed.
The match was 5:47.
Okay. Being overshadowed by the fact that everyone knew this debut was about to happen. And now they're doing it on this US show. You know, the title match. I don't know. The whole thing just feels very, I get what they're trying to do. I don't know if they're succeeding.
No, I don't. At this point, it doesn't feel like they're trying to make it work. We'll see how that goes with Mercedes and Kyrie and what their card position is on that show. Because you would assume in America, they'll probably be pretty high up on the card.
I mean, I'm assuming they're going to main event.
That's, yeah, you would have to assume, but, like, I don't know. So we'll see how it continues to be booked in New Japan, because I don't, aside from maybe big shows, I don't think this title's really going to get defended in Stardom.
No, it isn't going to get defended. I think the whole point is it's not getting defended in Stardom.
Yeah, and also because of that, I'm still not convinced that Mercedes is working Stardom.
Well, supposedly she's working their big, big show, and that's it.
Yeah, okay.
So I don't know, maybe she wins the title, and then she does defend the title on that show, and she loses it.
Maybe.
And
then she goes back to the Fed.
I'll say this for Mercedes Monet. If her presence in and around Stardom, whatever that happens to be, gets it so that we can get live shows on Stardom World, she will become my favorite Stardom wrestler of all time.
Yeah. I don't think that's going to happen because they're so hardcore into the pay-per-view model now.
Because I think if they trot out the pay-per-view model, if they say, okay, Mercedes Monet is defending against, I don't know, whoever, on this big April show, and they stick with their pay-per-view model, I think a lot of people are not going to buy it.
Yeah. And I 100% think, hey, what happened? What's going to happen.
We'll see.
Yeah. No, I am 100% convinced that nothing will change how they do their model now because people keep buying their shows.
And you may be right.
They ran a pay-per-view last night you didn't even know about.
That is true. Which, speaking of that pay-per-view that I didn't realize was happening, on that pay-per-view, which was a continuation of the Triangle Derby tournament, which Stardom kicked off earlier this week, the main event was Saya Kamatani defeating Ami Sorey to retain her title. It was her 13th successful defense in a row, which ties Momo Watanabe's defense record with the title. So Saya Kamatani calling out Momo Watanabe after the match to offer her a title shot. So the two people tied on 13 defenses. If Saya beats her, she will hold the all-time defense record. Other than that, in Stardom, the Triangle Derby is happening. It just kicked off. They've had a few shows. We will most likely not be covering a lot of the Triangle Derby on the show, but we will talk about the standings and everything that's happening, but probably not diving deep into any of these shows because
fuck frankly, off with another tournament, Stardom. Yes. Fuck right off.
In my opinion, Stardom does too many tournaments. And we're about to talk about another one they're doing in the upcoming shows. What else has been happening? Seedling had a show on December 28th. Big news there. Well, first, Mima Shimoda is back, and also Arisa Nakajima returning and defeating Hiroyo Matsumoto to win back the Beyond the Sea title, which she had to vacate due to her injury, and has now won that back. There were some after-match happenings, which are going to lead into their next show, which we'll talk about soon. In Oz Academy, they had a big show on December 30th. Chihiro Hashimoto and Yu defeating Hiroyo Matsumoto and Rina Yamashita to win the Oz tag titles, and Akino retaining the Oz singles title over Mayumi Ozaki. Tokyo Joshi had a show on the 7th, two shows on the 7th and the 8th. The big happening there beyond the announcement of Miyu Yamashita's mild concussion was that the Wasteland War Party briefly kidnapped Palm Harajuku.
Oh no.
Took her backstage, and then Heidi Howitzer told Max to release Palm because they were there to win matches and not kidnap people. It seems to me, I mean, it's very clear that Heidi Howitzer is the brains of the operation in the Wasteland War Party.
So did you watch this show?
I didn't watch the show, but I saw some clips.
Okay, so was that like a backstage segment they did?
Yeah, because Max carried Palm backstage like over her shoulder.
Okay.
Passed out.
So they're doing in Wrestle Universe, they're doing more backstage stuff because on the final Gunbare show of the year, they did a segment where Imanari as himself and Imanari from the Pheromones met up as though they're two entirely different people.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Well, this was more of a traditional, like, what do you think about the match? And it just happened that they also had kidnapped Palm.
Okay.
I guess kidnap is like they were still in the venue and everyone knew where Palm was because they were in front of a camera with her. But they sort of held her for a brief amount of time.
I hope this becomes a recurring theme where Max keeps wanting to kidnap Palm.
It could be, and that may lead to the big Palm Harajuku moment.
Yep. Or Palm joins them.
Maybe.
Pom becomes the Spike Dudley to the Wasteland War Party's Dudley Boys.
Ice Ribbon had their traditional December 31st Ribbon Mania show, Hikaru Shida and Ibuki Hoshi retaining their tag titles over Totoro Satsuki and Yuna Manase. It was announced that Ibuki Hoshi will be having singles matches from now until Shida returns with the tag titles. That started on their January 3rd show. She had a singles match against Nao Ishikawa, which was a lot of fun, at their dojo. That is available on their Club Ice Ribbon YouTube channel. Also at that Ribbon Mania show, Sayori Ono retaining her Ice Infinity title over Asahi. Wave had their first of the month show, which happened to be January 1st, the first day of the new year. Yu retained her EVE International title against Kohaku. Akari, Shimizu, and Saki retained their tag titles against Cherry and Kaori Yoniyama. And Hikaru Shida, another successful title defense, retaining her Regina De Wave title against Risa Sarah. So that is everything.
Has this show made tape? Is this out?
I don't think it has. I didn't find it.
Okay, because I really want to see that Shida versus Sarah match.
I believe their December 22nd show is out there.
Okay.
So it may just be a few more days.
Cool.
Upcoming. What is upcoming? Well, Stardom is continuing their Triangle Ribbon tournament with shows on the 9th, the 14th, and the 15th. On the 9th, a fun singles match on that card. Suri versus Yuna Mizumori.
Ooh.
Is happening, so that should be a lot of fun. And then New Blood 7 is happening on January 20th, featuring the New Blood Tag Tournament. That's right. If you love tournaments, Stardom is the promotion for you. You'll never be without one. The card is Miran, who is from Diana, going up against Rina. Nanai Takahashi will take on Waka Tsukiyama in a passion injection match, where Nanai will hope to inject passion for wrestling into Waka Tsukiyama. And then
at least it's not like one of those like needle matches. That's what, like, I assumed it was like Jun Kasai is gonna come stab Waka Tsukiyama.
No, I think it's just a statement of mental intent and not physical intent.
Oh, okay. I was thinking of the matches Kasai would have against I can't remember who it was, but they would do them like, they would call them stimulation something matches, and it'd just be all needles and shit.
Yeah, I don't think Stardom's gone that far to needles yet, quite yet.
That you gotta wait for Stardom and Showcase for that.
The tag tournament matches will be Mariah May and Zaya Brookside taking on Starlight and Karma.
Okay, what are we doing with Karma? Why is she still doing this? She was her normal self on the big 29th show.
She's Karma.
What the fuck?
Micah and Tomoka Inaba will take on Hanan and Saya Ida. Amy Sorey and Nanami will take on Momo Kogo and Momoka Hanazona. And very excitingly, Hina and Miyu Amasaki will take on Mai Sakurai and the triumphantly returning, Rossi said, if you don't support it, you can't be our sponsor. Returning to New Blood, Chan Yoda.
Fuck yeah. Rossi heard. She got the award in the last episode.
And Rossi literally fired the sponsor that didn't like her on the shows and got someone else.
Did you see the video from the press conference where they convinced Rossi to bite into a carrot and it's as though he's never had a carrot in his life before? And it was like the worst thing he's ever tasted.
I have not seen that, although as someone who also does not like carrots, I understand that.
I'm sending you this right now. It's one of the most bizarre things I've ever seen, because everyone seems kind of just like bewildered by the carrot just as a whole. Like, what is this? And Rossi's
one of the most bizarre things you've seen says a lot for something happening at a Stardom press conference.
You know, yeah. It's the like it really is like the most animated I've ever seen Rossi. Yeah, like, he's definitely not asleep in this part of the press conference. And he's just like, "All right, here's the I just sent it to you so you can watch it."
great.
It's and then Chan Yoda is just dressed in like a traditional Playboy Bunny outfit too, which is fantastic. She was just not going to be used. Like, it's so good.
He's eating, he's reacting to the carrot as if it's very hot.
Yes! It's like it's the spiciest thing he's ever eaten.
Oh, wait. And then he just wanders off.
Yeah. Because he chews it just a little bit, but it's clear he's like, nope, I'm going to go spit this in the garbage.
He does one chew, his eyes go wide, he covers his mouth. He goes, no, he chews it to, oh, it's in the side of his mouth. He's sort of chewing, and now he walks off.
And Miyu Amasaki's face.
Is just looking.
She's like, and he's gone. What did I sign up for?
Oh, right. Well, I didn't see it, but now I have seen it.
Because it's like, when I describe to you what's happening, what actually happens is not at all what you expect it to be, but like, it's just... He's like, has he never had a carrot before?
I guess not. Now I'm gonna go. His, I mean, really, his eyes going wide after the carrot goes in his mouth should be a meme.
It, yeah, it's the most surprised anyone has ever been.
And then.
Thank you for this
gift.
Oh,
he hands the carrot back. He hands the carrot back to Chan Yoda. Because she's then holding it. Like proof of something. I mean...
Rossi's look of surprise is our new show logo.
Here, I'm actually... wait, can I not do this? Oh, there we go. Okay. I'm taking a screenshot of Rossi's... surprise face. I'm just gonna post that with no context to our Twitter.
Good.
Or maybe I'll post it with a context of someone's excited for our new episode.
Love it.
Anyway, and then the very next day on the 21st, Stardom has a show that will feature Ami Sorei defending her Future of Stardom title against Mai Sakurai. Seedling has a show coming up on the 13th that will feature a singles match, a fun singles match between Kaho Kobayashi and Kakeru Sekiguchi. That should be fun. And then we'll also feature, after Arisa won the Beyond the Sea title back, the quote-unquote new generation of wrestlers came out and challenged her. So this show will see Arisa Nakajima, Hiroyo Matsumoto, and Ryo Mizunami taking on Riko Kaiju, Riko Kawahata, and Itsuki Aoki in a match. Tokyo Joshi has the beginning of their Max Heart tournament coming up, which is their tag team tournament on January 15th. The three matches will be Saki Akai and Yuki Arai, the former champions, taking on Raku and Yuki Aeno. Raku and Yuki were scheduled to have that tag title challenge. That did not happen because of Raku, but getting a chance here to maybe defeat the former champions and move on in the tournament. 1 to 1 million, Miyu Yamashita and Maki Ito will take on Free Wi-Fi, Hikari Noah and Nao Kakuta. And Yuki Kamifuku and Mihiro Kiryu will take on the Karate Pals, Jiria Nagano, and Moka Miyamoto. And then on the 19th, Shoko Nakajima and Hyper Masao will take on Haruna Neko and Kaya Torabami. And Rika Tatsumi and Miyu Watanabe will face the winner of the Akai Arai Raku Yuki Aino match, and Daisy Monkey Suzume and Ariso Endo will take on the winner of Kamifuku Kiryu against Nagano Miyamoto. Really hoping to see Suzume and Endo versus Nagano and Miyamoto, because I think that will be really good. And I think Suzume and Ariso Endo have a good shot in this tournament.
Yeah, that would be a really nice match. I think that's the way to go with those two teams for sure.
Sendai Girls has a big show coming up on the 15th. I did not allow Kelly to look at this card.
Okay, good. I've been scrolling down very carefully so as not to spoil myself for whatever this is going to be.
Because I believe there is a major Kelly match on this show, but I think this whole card looks very good. We'll start with Yurika Oka versus Unagi Sayaka in a singles match. Jaguar Yokota, Kyoko Inoue, and Aja Kong will take on Sayori Ano, Miyuki Takase, and Ayame Sasamura. Hiroyo Matsumoto and Jun Kasai will face off against Mayumi Ozaki and Takashi Sasaki.
Hell yeah.
In a match, a big time Kelly energy match.
Oh yeah, that's going to be awesome.
There, and then two title matches, Chihiro Hashimoto and Yu will defend their tag titles against Ryo Mizunami and Maname, and Asuka will defend her title against Mika Iwata. That, to me, looks like a great card.
Damn, that show rocks, and I really need to not forget to watch it, because I assume it's going to pop up on their YouTube.
Well, we will watch it. We will watch it, and we will cover it next time.
Hell yeah.
I'm saying it right here. We're going to cover it in depth next time. That's a great card. 2022, we covered a lot of Stardom and Tokyo Joshi. 2023, we're going to get more into everyone in the whole scene. And that's going to start next time with this big Sendai Girls show. But that is everything coming up in the next 2 weeks of Joshi. Kelly, what else do you have to say to the people?
So as the show was going, or actually just a little bit ago, I was sent this video from Tony Atlas's Twitter, where a woman repeatedly punches him in the face and then stomps on his head. And he goes, "Old school can give it and they can take it. Hashtag tough, hashtag old, hashtag man, hashtag stomp, hashtag kick, hashtag punch. It's all in the mind and making me feel fine."
And let's all carry that energy forward in 2023.
Yep.
Well, that's all we got. If you can believe that. So we will talk to you again in 2 weeks. For Kelly, I am Taylor saying farewell and see you next time.
Hello there, my name's Neil David, and I'm the host of Eurograps Express, the podcast exclusively dedicated to the wrestling of Europe. If it's wrestling, and it happens in Europe, and it's good, we talk about it. Whether it's RevPro, Progress, WXW, Passion Pro, Pro Wrestling Chaos, Pro Wrestling North, we don't care, we talk about them all. If it's good, and it's exciting, I want to share it with you. We're on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Check us out on the feed. Check us out on Twitter at EurograpsEXP. And join us for chat about European wrestling and a little bit of chat about cheese. Hopefully see you there.